Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Katie Britton. Remember when you were growing up, there were some kids who just didn't fit in? Maybe we were even that person. And Ned Vizzini's The Other Normals, Perry is that kid. He's totally awkward, absorbed in his role-playing game, and, well, branded a loser by everyone, including his parents. Although he knows he is, he doesn't want to enter the real world and is intent on hiding in his gaming one.
I think it's safe to call him a sorry excuse for a human. One of the things I tried to do with this book was take some of the shine off of being a dork. Being a dork is something that's become kind of cool in our society, but really being a dork in real life is never good, and sometimes it's sugar-coated, and in this book it's not.
You're absolutely right that it isn't sugar-coated, because at the beginning I'm thinking, man, I don't really like Perry just on the pure fact that I feel like he needed to help himself, but he really wasn't. And other people would say, even his parents or his parents through their lawyers, that he needs to go out, make friends, get a girlfriend, and start talking to people.
Yeah, those things require effort. It can be very easy if you're trapped in any kind of loserdom in adolescence or otherwise to be the victim. Until you apply effort to your situation, you're not going to fix it. And that's one of the things that Perry learns.
And his parents have decided to take a proactive stance on helping Perry and even his brother, who is a drug addict and an alcoholic, but primarily an alcoholic. And they're going to send him to rehab and then send Perry to camp. And of course, like most camps, the camps are not exactly what it seems in the brochure.
Yes, and I base that on my own experience. Summer camp brochures, they take place in an alternate universe where everyone is racially distributed equally, and they're smiling all the time, and they're not dirty. And if you look at a camp in a brochure and then you go to the real camp, sometimes you'll be shocked at the difference.
You used two great words, alternate reality, and that is exactly what starts happening to Perry. And his game that he always plays, Creatures in Caverns, all of a sudden he realizes that it may not be as fantastic or fictional as he first believed.
Yes, and that was something that I always wanted to happen to me as a young person. I still want it to happen. Since I turned 30, I guess I don't want it quite as much, but I always used to want in New York City for the subway doors to open and for me to be in a jungle or a desert and for me to go down the rabbit hole. I think it's something a lot of people wish for, and in this book I got a chance to explore it.
So this rabbit hole, Sabenya, and it is an alternate world where it's not just an alternate world of humans, but there are so many different kinds of characters and fictional beings that are alive there. And Morton is the first person that Peregrine or Perry meets.
Yeah, Morton is one of my favorite characters in the book, because when it was initially conceived, The Other Normals was not going to be a fantasy book. It was going to be a book just about summer camp and a boy and a girl who meet in summer camp. And as I was working on it, I got this vision in my head one day. It's the only way to describe it, of a man with red skin and yellow hair and a tail smoking pebbles out of a pipe, crouched in the woods, and I couldn't get that image out of my head, and I thought, what if I put this character in this book? And I really built the fantasy from that image. So Morton is a very important character in the book. He's Perry's spirit guide, and he's our first entry point into the world of The Other Normals.
And I like how he tells Perry that it has a name, but we can't tell it to you because you just can't comprehend it.
Yeah, I tried to take that from ideas of Taoism, where some things can't be pronounced. And in the Western world, we think everything can be named and pronounced, but there are things in this fantasy world that can't be. There are no words for it, and there's no real word for the world. So the world of The Other Normals is the best we can do. Sabenya is another alternate way of naming a place there. But the whole world can't be named. We just can't comprehend its real name as humans.
Now, the beauty of this book is that you have something called correspondence. For every human, there is a corresponding creature in the other world. And I enjoyed trying to figure out who everybody's correspondents are. And it's the same for Perry as he's going along trying to figure out who his correspondent is, and Ada's and Morton's, and even the camp counselors at the camp where he has been left.
Yeah, that's a little bit of butterfly effect. When you do something in the other world, you cause changes in our world. And there's a one-to-one population correspondence. Everyone here, there's one person there, whether that person is a frog with a human body or a human with a dog head. It doesn't matter. We all have somebody that we correspond to in this other world. It was really fun. I mean, it's a little bit of Wizard of Oz, and I make no claim to it being original, the idea of having avatars, but I had a lot of fun with it in this novel.
So when you are planning it out, do you have your own sort of map or tree when you were deciding what character you wanted to be the correspondent of your human world characters?
I did. Some things came together in the writing, and that's always the case if you're cooking on a novel, cooking meaning you'll actually finish it, that things reveal themselves as you go along. That's what makes it fun. I had some basic ideas of who was going to correspond to who when I started. Other things presented themselves. It's easy to fall into a rabbit hole of research when you're writing a book like this. I've read books about the many worlds interpretation of quantum physics and the 1001 Nights. And sometimes I thought, oh, today I'll just read this book as opposed to actually writing the other normals. If you don't write any of it and just do research, you'll never actually write it.
With all wonderful fantasy books, you need to have a quest. And Perry has a quest that Morton has assigned him. And Morton's he's helping him along real life stinks for Perry, quite frankly. So, of course, he would want to be in the world of other normals. But Morton, and then there's a young girl, Ada, who also is helping Perry complete his quest.
I grew up with Super Mario Brothers as one of the primary art forms that influenced the way that I look at the world. I spent a lot of time playing that video game. The idea that you're out to find a princess, and when you find her, she's in another castle, that's very primal to me. And putting a structure like that, or playing with that idea of, we've got a quest, we've got to go find the princess, that really excited me. And I tried to add a twist to it that would keep the novel fresh. But this image of Morton and Perry and Ada out on an adventure trying to find someone who will save the world, it just strikes me as one of the most exciting situations for any characters to be in any novel.
It is, and especially for Perry, because he is learning so much more about himself and becoming confident as the story progresses, and he is in Savenia.
Yeah, this story doesn't work if it's not a coming-of-age story, and Perry is set up as a late bloomer to accurately reflect where I was when I was 15 years old. There were a lot of things I thought I would be by the time I was 15 that I wasn't, and there were a lot of things that confused me about the world. And it was very easy for me to escape into my Dungeons and Dragons books that I owned, and I would read and make little charts and characters. Ultimately, I had to learn how to interact with the real world in order to grow up, and that's what Perry has to discover in the other normals.
And he hates those words, late bloomer. I mean, in a sense, it seems like everybody who tells him you're a late bloomer automatically pushes him down to another level, which doesn't help his self-esteem or his self-worth.
Late bloomer is one of the worst phrases in the English language. There's nothing worse than being a late bloomer. It's never said with anything other than loving condescension. Hearing it from your parents is bad. hearing it from a member of the opposite sex that you have a crush on is particularly devastating. I'm glad that this book let me explore the vagaries and vicissitudes of that term.
And of course, we can't have a quest without some bad guys coming after you. And I'd like to touch on Officer Tendrile. Even his name exudes what he is.
Yeah, Officer Tendrile is a bad dude. He has octopus arms that he can wrap around you and cause you great pain. He's also just got a gruff, overbearing demeanor that I found sometimes in adult figures when I was a teenager, who really wanted to be my friend, who thought they were teaching me something about the world by being gruff and manly, but who ended up just scaring me and making me more confused. So he's got a little bit of that uncle who thinks that it's cool to tell you about when he goes out and parties, and really that just confuses you. And he's also got a little bit of pure monster in him.
That little bit of pure monster in him, he is charged with making sure the biggest of the bads, Ophisa, has kidnapped Sabenia's princess, making sure that nobody is working for him and keeping the princess held captive. So I see where you say Officer Tendrile is awful to Perry and Morton and the other characters, but at the same time, we at least think that he's there for the greater good and making sure the biggest of the bads don't take over and ruin their universe.
Yeah, this book has some political overtones and is about political power in some ways. And he's an example of entrenched political power. The world that Perry goes to is a world where there's an appointed council that runs the government that has absolute control. They approve things and disapprove things. So there are no pants in the world that Perry goes to because they're not approved by this council, which is called the appointees. And Officer Tendrile he's one of the enforcer arms of that council. So he has the rule of law on his side. He's a police officer, but he's an example of entrenched power run amok.
The corruption within. And then, and that makes Morton question whether or not there really is the big bad and what is going on with his universe.
Yeah, Morton is more of a revolutionary, more of a conspiracy theorist, but also a little bit of a nut and hard to trust because he has a substance abuse problem. He smokes these pebbles that he finds on Earth to distraction. And so a lot of people don't take what he thinks about the government seriously.
Well, it is a wonderful, complex story. The name of it is The Other Normals. Ned, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, not just for having me, but for clearly having really read the book. That means a lot to authors. It always does.
Again, the name of Ned Vizzini's book is The Other Normals. It is published by Bowser and Bray. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.